The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. I am back in the hot seat. Thank you very much. Had a great time in Paris. I had a fantastic time in London. A friend of mine got his phone snatched right out of his hand in front of our eyes. That's a byproduct of being in London. Yeah, this little guy came riding by with a Grubhub satchel on the back of his electric bike. And we just came out from dinner, and we were in this kind of dark alleyway. And here comes this guy out of nowhere. We didn't even see him coming, and snatched his phone right out of his hand. And then we pursued on foot, my son and he did. And then my buddy and I went down an alleyway thinking we could cut him off. You know, those are great ideas, right? At 9:30 at night in London. Well, anyway, we didn't find him. He went off, got his phone that he wanted, and the rest is history. But other than that, everything else in London was fantastic. Of course, the coronation happening this weekend, I think maybe even on Friday. And I'm going to head down to the Oaks and be part of the Kentucky Derby experience this weekend. Yeah, never been there, believe it or not. If you think you grew up in Indiana, number one, everyone should have gone to the Indianapolis 500, right? That's number one. Well, I can guarantee you, which is not a term we can use loosely on the show, that many of you listening have never been to the Indianapolis 500. Shame on you. Well, then we're 2 hours from Louisville, right? Put your quarter in your mouth and say that three times. And you've never been to the Kentucky Derby? Are you kidding me? Well, here at 53 years old, five generations deep, I've never been to the Kentucky Derby. So we are heading there and meeting friends from New Jersey who had this on their bucket list, including the Indianapolis 500. So this year, Kentucky Derby. Next year, I'll take them to the Indianapolis 500. So a lot of fun things happening this weekend. Of course, graduation weekend here in Bloomington, Indiana. I am grateful to be out of town for that as we have an onslaught. I saw them as I came into the studio today. Parents, which, you know, my son, who retired from college after his second year, decided to pursue other avenues, which is completely fine with me. He would have been graduating this May, so it would have been a different weekend for me than a Derby weekend. But yeah, to see parents coming into town, I relate with them very, very strongly. Man, 4 years went by, right? Quickly. You blink your eye and it is gone. And that's life in general, folks. As you get older, we know we're like a roll of toilet paper. The closer you get to the end, the faster it goes. I'm feeling your pain, but here we go. We're going to have a fun show today. Hot Rod will be joining us in a few minutes because the Fed did boost rates to a 16-year high. No surprises there, but we have just had a resiliency of the consumer. We've had crazy stuff happening behind the scenes that will keep this market and economy trucking along. The Fed is trying to bring this thing in on a soft landing, but I think they're frustrated and want to have a hard landing. I've got a ton on this here for the show because it's very, I'm mindful of the early 1990s, the 89, I should say, the savings and loan crisis happened. The Fed came in, started tightening. We had a slight recession, only lasted about 8 months before we took off into the booming 90s. So I'm going to reflect on that. I'm going to reflect on demographics. I'm going to reflect on predictable spending patterns and really what drives things, because an article came out this week in the Wall Street Journal that new housing purchases were back on top again. They're in favor again. They're hot again. Why is that? Is it because rates have come down? Maybe a little bit. But no, it has nothing to do with that. It has more to do with people, where they are in their age and stage of life, what they are doing, and that drives everything. So let's give a shout out to my good friend Tim at Unrivaled Electric. He wants to be your full service electrical contractor. They specialize in generators like mine, which always works when I need it to work. Solar arrays, which on this beautiful Thursday could definitely soak up some energy. He's a veteran. Unrivaled Electric, give him a call. 812-361-3604. Give him a shout on Facebook. Kenny Bland Auctions, they want to be your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. And I was just thinking about Lance at the Like Law Group. I'm going to try to have him on to talk about elder care and other things that he's had going on. We haven't had Lance on the show for several years, believe it or not, as we went through 19, 20, 21, now 22, now 23, right? Now I sound like an auctioneer, Dirk. Thank you very much. Attorney Lance Like, give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. Yeah, a lot to going on. Let's talk about last week briefly before we get Hot Rod on the phone. Last week, strong earnings, several mega cap tech companies that kind of had an offset, really, to the renewed regional banking jitters, a.k.a. the savings and loan 1989. I don't think it's like that, but just to let you know the correlation for later in the show. And we had some weak economic data. So that was all offset by these mega cap companies coming in with some pretty strong reports. All of the indices were up. We had the earnings drive rebound. It was a very busy week for earnings reports, but none more important than those big names that I just didn't talk about, but they're big tech names. After 2 days of sharp losses on revived regional bank fears, right? We talked about this several weeks ago, that the banks in California really are not like these regional banks around here, but you can't, you know, ignore the spillover. We thought it could potentially happen, and it started to happen. But anyway, that was definitely dampened down by the powerful rally with these big tech companies, positive earnings surprises from these guys. Also aiding the sentiment last week was first quarter GDP. Though the report showed muted economic growth that fell short of expectations, people were encouraged by the strong consumer spending. I'll get back to that in a few minutes because that's what it's all about. In a sign that higher rates are slowing economic growth, first quarter GDP slowed to 1.1% annualized growth. That's why I think this rate hike could be the last rate hike. We'll get Hot Rod's opinion of that. But healthy consumer spending helped offset a decline in business investment and a slowdown in non-residential investment. What does that mean, right? Non-residential investment. Well, I'll let you decide that. I've got a whole part on that as well, but we're not going to get into that on the radio show. Economists did expect first quarter GDP to come in around 2. The business inventory investment slowdown reduced the headline GDP by 2.26%. So we're getting that GDP number down, down, down. What is a recession? 2 quarters of negative GDP growth. Hopefully we don't get to that. But if the Fed can see slow GDP, 1%, 0%, something like that, for a couple of quarters, I think they'll be very, very happy. The initial GDP report also had some disappointing inflation news, unfortunately, where the personal consumption expenditure price index, that's the Fed's preferred inflation measure, did go up 4.2%, which was higher than the 3.7% forecast. So we need GDP to get down. We need inflation to get down. All that needs to happen before this Fed will take their foot off the pedal. Let's get Hot Rod on the phone, get his take on everything. We'll be right back, guys. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Hot Rod Holloway joins me now on the phone. Rod, we had GDP growth that slowed in the first quarter to 1.1% annualized growth. Healthy consumer spending helped offset a decline in business investment and a slowdown in non-residential investment, whatever that in the heck means. And the Fed did what they said they were going to do, raise rates to a 16-year high, although they have signaled that this could be it for them. This has been a crazy, crazy first 5 months, I guess. Now we're in the fifth month of the year. you know, something you and I have never been part of before. In our, I mean, my nearly 30-year career, you're almost there as well. But where do we stand on things today? Because the consumer seems to be really strong, and I have some parts on that later, more to do with demographics and how many people there are and what they're spending money on and all that kind of good stuff. I think it's going to come back to the staples, you know, because when you think about baby boomers and their kids and what they're doing and what they're buying and what they're really spending money on, you know, I mean, I've got a whole bunch of stuff on that and why I think the next 10 years could be pretty decent. But where do we stand today? We have the Fed raising rates to a 16-year high. The market probably is a little bit out of its league right now, doing things that no one expected it to do, being up for the year. That's crazy. I didn't expect that. And I know, Rod, you're kind of in the same camp when it comes to where we are, where we probably should be, and where we're likely to go in the future.
Yeah. So as you alluded to, yep, the Fed did what they said they were going to do. I would say that the market didn't necessarily hear as definitive of a message of a pause as what the market was probably hopeful for, which is why we've kind of seen the weakness after the Fed meeting and that carrying over into the market today. Yes, he did change his language. So he no longer said that current conditions merit further rate hikes, but he also didn't say it was a definitive pause. He basically, in different terms, said kind of what they always say, which is he's data dependent. So if the data continues to come in and show strength in the jobs market, strength in the consumer, and inflation that isn't dropping extremely fast, because as we started to see, yes, we're consistently going down, but, you know, we're going down a few bips at a time. It's not like we're knocking off a whole percent at a time on that. Then there is the possibility for the Fed to potentially have another 25 basis point raise in June. Current probability, I think, is at about 20 or 30%. It had actually dropped all the way to zero earlier this week. Did tick up a little bit after the meeting on Wednesday on that. But I think the greatest disconnect for the market and the Fed, the market still is predicting a couple of rate cuts at the end of the year. That was one thing the Fed was a little more definitive on, as he has continued to say very consistently, which is they don't anticipate rate cuts in the near future, that they're going to have to continue to leave this rate at a restrictive level, and whether it's where they're at today after this week's move, or they make another move in June, or even pause for a few meetings and maybe have to make a move later in the year, they're still going to be focused on that. And I think from the standpoint of the consumer and the consumption, I think this is the only area that I'm nervous. There is no doubt the consumer continues to spend. And they're spending on things outside of, just as you alluded to, Dave, the staples, in which good economies and bad economies, people continue to buy the staples. They may trade down and not buy the name brand product and buy the generic version. But it'll still happen. But the discretionary spending has still been very strong. The concern comes into, we also are showing record high credit card debt right now appears to be manageable, because while there is a slight uptick on the last graph I saw on delinquencies on credit cards, it's still at a very low level. But obviously, if we begin to see more and more layoffs, you begin to see unemployment grow, you would expect that you will probably begin to see more and more delinquent payments on credit cards, which obviously then eventually leads to defaults. We've seen a similar scenario, and the chart looks very similar, in auto loans. Slight uptick, but not at a level to where you would be overly concerned. So I think that's my greatest concern with the consumer. They show strength, but is it a little bit of a false belief that they are not as strong as it looks, because a lot of their spending is now going on to high interest credit card as opposed to that excess savings that everybody accumulated through the pandemic year?
You know, if you think about folks, interest rate increases, they take a while to take effect. Think about if you had a 5,000 square foot home, and let's say it was, let's say it was 80 degrees outside, but you wanted to keep it a cool 70, and you had your temperature set at 70, and your air condition goes off. It takes a little while before the house will turn into an 80-degree house, right? It takes a little bit of time. That's really what we're talking about when we discuss Fed rate hikes and the effect of that, because, Rod, a rate hike today, we may not feel that sucker until the fall. So that's why I think this Fed, in all the years where we've been around, I mean, through all Greenspan and all of them, I have as much confidence in this group of folks as I've ever had that they're doing the right thing. They're communicating what they're being very transparent. The market may or may not listen to what they had to say. And what's interesting to me this time, and I'm not going to spend a load of time on this, but I want to spend a little bit of time on it, that in the past, like the past several months, the market heard something entirely different. This time, literally, he came out and said that we might be done, but we also might have to continue to go up if we're prepared to do more if it's warranted. I would have argued a month ago the market would have rallied on those comments. This time, for some reason, decided not to. It's just such a wacky, wacky, wacky market when it comes to what is going on with what the traders are hearing or whatever is going on in this crazy market.
Yeah, and I think a little bit of what's playing into that is you're getting more and more people that are starting to sound the alarm bells of a recession is inevitable. Now, they're not all predicting a deep, long, protracted recession, but more and more coming to the table that, yep, we're probably going to have some form of a recession as we move forward. There is also still fears around the banking industry.
Right.
So while it is a little bit stemming from what has already happened with SVB and Signature Bank and those, what is potentially going to take down, if it does, any more banks in the future won't be exactly the same thing that they did. Partially will be, because it'll still be the run on the bank. But the greatest fear in the banking sector for more turmoil really comes down to commercial real estate. And both the amount of investment exposure that the small to mid-sized banks have through buying commercial-backed mortgage bonds, in addition to the amount of commercial loans they have on the books with that. So obviously, if you continue to get that run on the bank and your investment portfolio that may be a mixture of treasuries and commercial-backed securities take a hit in valuation, that's exactly what we kind of saw with First Republic, is that they had so many withdrawals with their client base that they had to now take some of the assets that were in hold to maturity and take them out and liquidate them. Well, that means they take a huge hit, because the hold to maturity, you get to hold that on your books at the par value that you get at maturity. As soon as it comes out of that category, now it's marked to market, and we know that most of those bonds with those low yields are very far below that par value. So the double whammy of the withdrawals and then what they have to do to help cover some of those withdrawals just dramatically reduces their reserves. That's where the potential issues could come moving forward. So it's not as direct that, oh, they got a little aggressive in pursuing, you know, venture capital and startup funds that were no longer doing as well in a higher inflation, higher interest rate environment, or crypto companies, which was the other aspect that on the East Coast and Signature Bank kind of was pursuing. This is more or less along the lines, we're seeing some of the negative effects of what the Fed has had to do to combat inflation, which is a historic rise in interest rates that really does some damage on the price of those low-yielding bonds that people have bought, even though they're very safe. A lot of them are treasury bonds. You're going to get paid, but guess what? You're not going to get paid that par value for another 10 years.
So real simply, folks, this is the way this thing works. You're a regional bank. You loaned $10 million to me to buy an apartment complex. I'm paying you 4.25%, and I locked that in for 5 years or whatever. And at the time, you were paying about, oh, 0.5% on all your deposits. Well, now, 2 years later, guess what? I still have that $10 million loan. I'm still paying you 4%, but you can't pay people 0.5% anymore. You're going to have to pay them 4-5% to keep their money on deposit. That is a losing proposition. And if you don't do it, guess what? They're going to pull their money out and go somewhere else. And if your deposits are what you use to basically loan out, and it's even worse than that because there's leverage involved, you know, you put a deposit in of $100, they're going to loan out, you know, $100 or $1,000. That's the way kind of the math works behind this thing. It can. They can. There's federal rules, and federal banks are different than, you know, regional banks, and, you know, it's different. But the bottom line is that they've loaned out more money than they have on deposits. That's the bottom line, no matter which type of bank you are. And that's the problem. All of a sudden, as Rod said, now deposits are going, and they have their investments that they put their deposits in to try to make more than what they were paying depositors, and now they have to sell those at major losses because they have a 10-year bond paying 2%, and the new 10-year bonds are paying 5%. Man, that's where it gets really ugly. So if everyone just didn't do anything, everything would be fine. But unfortunately, or fortunately, that's not the way this world works. People are going to move their money to where they can get the best deal. And that's where I think the Fed has a real, real dilemma on their hands. And we'll see. I hope that it doesn't roll through the entire banking system, but there's definitely some cracks, some frays, some concerns. And that's kind of where I was headed with this whole consumer spending, similar to the early 90s, when we had a crack in the banking system, the SNL problem, savings and loan in 1989, primarily situated down in Texas. A lot of it driven by change in tax law. Well, change in fiscal policy. You know, they went from saying you could deduct something three times over 1 year, and now, no, you can't do that anymore. And they had loaned money on these things. Well, that all blew up. And then guess what? It just trickled down. And then the Fed had to tighten, and they were tightening, and they tightened. And then we went into a recession. The recession only lasted about 8 months. So I'm going to, after I let you go, Rod, sort of talk about the similarities between where we were in the late 80s, early 90s to where we are today. But it's certainly good to know history, because if you understand history, you can put things in perspective. And every time's different, but there's also tons of similarities. I'll let you comment on that, Hot Rod, and then I'll let you go.
Yeah, most certainly. Well, I think one important thing to point out, and you didn't bring this particular time period up because we don't think it's a lot like it, which is the 2008 financial crisis. We don't believe that there is anywhere near as much leverage within some of the commercial loan debt that you had back in the 08 that really, really put a heavy weight on the whole financial institution and for systemic risk. So while there is some risk out there, I don't believe that we have a potential 2008 crisis on our hands, but it most certainly is something we have to pay attention to. And as you alluded to, maybe the 80s is a little better example as to how this thing could potentially unfold out there. The reality is not as much office space is needed anymore. You know, so when those loans come due, some people may be willing to just walk away from some things and say, you know what, I can't lease this stuff out anymore, so I'm going to reduce my footprint, even though I'm going to take a little bit of a hit myself. So that's where that kind of domino effect, as you just spelled out, how the loan game works, the deposit game, how those things. It's also pushing people into the biggest banks because they feel very confident that the government is not going to allow the great big money center banks like a J.P. Morgan Chase, a Citigroup, Bank of America, those big boys, to fail. So they haven't heard the Fed, or I shouldn't say the Fed, the Treasury step out and say, hey, we're gonna backstop all FDIC insured banks, even above 250,000 for all size banks. They haven't heard that. But they do know from systemic risk, the big boys will get saved, which is why you're seeing a fair amount of money go from the little guys to the big guys. But even the big guys have suffered actually net withdrawals. So there is some fear of the overall banking system, large to small, currently.
Rod Holloway, everyone. You'll hear him on Glass in the afternoon on Mondays and Fridays. Although, Rod, if you didn't get the email, Glass is on vacation, so he is out this Friday. So don't call in. You'll just get a long ringing sound in your ear. And maybe I was supposed to tell you that, just like your son was supposed
to say. No, Glass told me on Monday that we would be talking okay. A week from Monday because he would be on vacation.
Okay. I was going to say just how your son was supposed to tell everyone you would be late to the office this morning. So anyway.
Yeah, exactly right.
All right, brother. We'll talk to you later. Have a good one.
Okay. Have a great show.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, market for new homes rebound. Why? And why this won't stop. We're going to come back and talk to you about demographics, predictable spending patterns, and why spending matters. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. You know, I mentioned the savings and loan crisis, 89, the recession in early 90s, only lasted a short amount of time. Then we went on this crazy boom in the 90s, the roaring 90s, some people call it like the roaring 20s, right? It's similar to that because we had a lot of people at certain ages of life that were spending money on not just discretionary items, but necessity items. When people spend that drives the economy. Nearly 70% of our GDP, and I'll come back to more of this later, is consumer spending. Baby boomers laid out the script for what you do and when you do it. Their kids are doing the same thing for the most part. Demographics, predictable spending patterns at different ages and stages of life. A boomer, right? It's a person born between 46, my dad's year of birth, and 1964. Not far from me. I was born in 1970. My brother Dan, 1966. We're not part of the baby boom generation. We're that early generation where the late baby boomers, like my dad, started having kids. That's why my generation is somewhat smaller than the one behind me, which is the millennials, or I called them the echo boom, right, where the boomers just start having kids as well. Well, the generational group that has led to a significant impact on our economy, the baby boomers, their kids are doing the same thing. But we learned, like, when they rented their first home or apartment. What age did that baby boomer get married? When did they have their first kid? When did they have their second kid? Maybe their third, maybe their fourth. Not many did. Most people had about two or three at tops. When did they buy their first house? When did peak purchase of salty snacks happen? Or eating fast food at the age of 42? It's not them eating fast food at 42. It's their 13-year-old son that's eating a two Big Macs or double quarter pounder with cheese. When did they buy their second home? When did they begin to downsize? We're seeing that right now. And now, when do we begin seeing them slow down and slow down their spending? That's to come. If my dad was the early baby boomers, he's 75 years old. He is not slowing down. My clients who are 75 are not slowing down. This is not a slowdown period. Slowdown period typically happens in your 80s. Being in this industry, seeing people retire successfully and some not so successfully over my 30 years, think about that. Someone that I met and retired at 65 years old, they'd be 95 today if they were with me this entire time. So I understand, I see it, right? I see all that. Then the great wealth transfer is going to happen. More on that later if I have time. Because we talked about this great wealth transfer. It wasn't happening with the children of the Depression. They didn't have a ton of money. They had pensions. They had Social Security. That's all they had. Maybe a little bit in savings, CDs, whatever. They didn't have these trillions of dollars of retirement accounts that they had to rely on to provide their security in retirement. All that money will be transferring to the next generation over the next 20 to 30 years. That is what we call the great wealth transfer. Baby boomers now, more than ever, are holding the majority of this nation's wealth. According to an article I read last week, more than three quarters of the nation's wealth is in the baby boomers' hand. All right, more on that again later if I have time. Now, what about spending? You have the necessity spending. You have things you spend by choice. Even though it may not feel by choice, you might just be spending because it's the right thing to do. Like spending money on gymnastics, instruments, baseball gear. You know what I'm talking about. Kids cost a lot of money. Not bad. It's just the facts. My son's 22, he'll be 23 in December. He's starting to roll off my payroll slightly. Watching graduation weekend happen here, many of the parents have a smile on their face thinking this is it for me. Folks, it's not it for you. It's just a new beginning. Most kids will continue to be on the payroll in some form, some sense, for a few more years. They may still be on your whatever cell phone plan. They may still be on your health insurance. You know, they may still be, you know, you may still need to supplement some of their rent or whatever it might be, the car insurance, maybe even their car. So even though they're graduating college and moving on to the next phase of life, they're probably not completely off the payroll. Now, why is spending so important to understand? Well, first of all, the peak of the baby boom generation was born right around 1960. They had their first kid around 27, their second one around 29. So that's 1987, 1989. I was a senior in high school back then, 1988, when I graduated high school. Then the spending starts. Baby, right? You have all the stuff that goes with having a baby. Diapers and wipes and whatever it might be. And they grow so fast, they grow out of stuff. They have kindergarten. You have school and activities. Clothes, right? Cars, car insurance. They eat everything in sight. They leave every light in the house on. That's expensive. Kids are the most expensive when they're in their teenage years. College, right? You had to pay for that maybe. Or not. then they slowly do work off the payroll. They do, I promise you that. All this was happening in the 90s. What did housing do in the 90s? Kind of going back to the point is of market for new homes rebounds, why and why this won't stop. What did housing do in the 90s? What did the stock market do in the 90s? What did just about everything do in the 90s? The answer is nothing but go up. Like I said, you can call it the roaring 90s. Why? Because nearly 70%, again, of GDP, gross domestic product, which is kind of our gauge of economic output, what we produce, what we consume, is credited to consumer spending. Here's the interesting tidbit. In 1985, right, before the peak of the boomers started having kids, again, my dad already had his kids. I was already a senior in high school. But from 85 to 2010, consumer spending accounted for 60% of GDP in 1985 to nearly 70% in 2010. Dipped a little bit for a while, but we're right back to where we were in 2010, about 69% or so of GDP is consumer spending. Why? It's the kid of the baby boomer who are beginning to do the exact same thing. They're in the exact same boat as their parents were. Maybe a little bit later, maybe not having as many kids, but they're still spending. Now, I'm going to take a quick break because I'm running out of time. When I come back, I'm going to revisit, okay, this whole idea of why it's so important to keep your eye on where people are, what they're doing, what they're spending money on, and why that drives economic activity, and hopefully give you some comfort to think the next 10 years could be pretty darn good. I'll be right back, guys. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Now, you might be listening to me, and I might say things. You're like, nah, that's not right, Dave. Well, think about it as the average, right? My dad was born again in 1946. He and my mom were the very first of the baby boomers. My dad and mom had their kids early, much earlier than average, but not by a ton. My brother's 56. I'm 53. Brother, 52. Sister's 50 or 47. And we're all, and you know, and that's, what are we all doing? Especially my sister. My sister, Jana, has two boys in high school. Carrie has a freshman in Arizona. Daughter in high school, she's a swimmer, spring breaks, camps, cars, schools, spending a ton of money, right? They are spending a ton of money because that's when you spend the most. You hit your peak spending years right around 48. In America, not everyone, but on average again. Why? Because your kids are old and they cost more. So what does this mean for housing, for the markets, for almost anything? It means for the next decade, things should be good. Right? People, regardless of interest rates, regardless of a lot of different factors, people are going to want to own a home. And when you have the millennials, the children of the boomers, right? For the most part, not my generation, but the majority of them, what are they doing? They're getting married. They're having kids. They want to own a home. They're buying cars. They're doing stuff. And there's a bunch of them, right? There's a bunch of them. So you have to keep your eye on what's happening and who's doing it, and that will drive economic activity. Does it always mean the stock market goes up? No, it did in the 90s, right? Crazy returns in the 90s. I think the next 10 years could be good. I can't guarantee it. The stock market has its own sort of attitude about things. But when I look back at similarities from late 80s, early 90s, it's kind of interesting. In the early 90s, we had a slight recession. We needed it. Like I mentioned earlier, it only lasted 8 months. It was to slow things down a bit. But then we took off from there. We had tight monetary policy to slow inflation, to slow growth, right? There's so many similarities. It kind of makes your hair stand up on the back of your neck, to believe it or not. The banking crisis in 89, savings and loan by aggressive lending, right? And they also changed that tax law and accelerated depreciation back in the 86 tax law. So when the 86 tax law changed everything, when it comes to depreciation. So as an example, I could have bought something in some situations and had triple depreciation, and it went right against my regular income. So I could have bought something that didn't make any money. Let's use a piece of real estate. I could have paid $1 million for something and took a $3 million deduction, and it didn't really matter if it made any money or not because I made money on the tax side. Well, when that changed, a lot of the banks were lending to people that were doing this kind of stuff, primarily in the South, in the energy sector. And it blew up. The savings and loan sector completely blew up. It's interesting because as a kid, my dad worked for Workingman's Federal Savings and Loan, Fountain Federal Savings and Loan, right on the corner, right? They were around. Where are they now? They do not exist. So that was the change. That was the crack in the system that really caused us to have too much money in the system because of easy lending, a lot of money, tax law changed. We had to cool the economy down by tightening things, and we went into a recession. There are similarities to today, right? Did we have easy lending? Sure, because the interest rates were low. People borrowed a lot of money. Now, instead of tax rates being or changed or tax law changed, interest rates have changed. Interest rates have gone up. It changed the game. Changed the game of poker completely, and that's where we're having the problems. That's where we're seeing things kind of fall apart. So, what about people? Here in America, we have a lot of young people, a lot of people doing what they do, and that drives things. People that are very wealthy, typically the recessions don't affect them that much. They're still going to buy their Louis Vuittons. They're still going to buy their Guccis. They're still going to buy the BMWs, Mercedes, whatever it might be. It's not going to affect them that much. It's the average American. It's the average person that shops at Walmart, right, that eats peanut butter, that drinks Coke, that does all the things that everyone eats a lot of popcorn, right? That's the average American. So when you think of yourself and your family, you may not be overly average, right? You might not be that person. So when you talk about the average family having just under two kids each, the baby boomers having, you know, between three and four kids each, their parents having like 8 to 12 kids each, and you've heard me talk about this, that's where the math problems start to line up from a lot of social services perspective. But when you think about immigration, we have positive immigration here. You can argue whether it's legal, illegal, whatever, but people still want to come here. Our doors swing in, they don't swing out. When you look at the rest of this world, the doors are swinging out. And that's why we're better off than the rest of this world. But what about the rest of the world? There is no positive immigration. That's one of France's glaring issues. Too many promises, not enough young people to pay for it. So I'm going to stop there on enough about demographic trends, enough about spending, how it relates to the economy, and that's really all modern economies. So pretty much anyone in Europe or whatever, there's still some third world errs out there that doesn't really apply to, but consumers matter. That's why Chinese have been so fixated on having a consumer-driven economy because it's worked everywhere else. Why not? Why doesn't it work now? India, by the way, is getting ready to surpass China as the biggest population, if that matters. And they're pretty young. Everyone else is old. China's old. Japan's old. Europe's old. Everyone's old. U.S. is old. But we have young people. We have positive immigration. That's why I really believe the next 10 years could be very, very good. That is a glimmer of hope here from your host, Your Money with David Hayes. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, I was at the Ed Slot Conference last week, learned a lot. I'm going to try to share a few nuggets with you. This is Your Money again with David Hayes. All right, so last week, okay, you guys know I was gone. I was in Paris. I was in London. I came back. I was in the office for about 2 hours. I headed to Baltimore for my Ed Slot Elite IRA Advisor meeting, where I am on the board. I had a board meeting, I had a new member orientation to attend, and then a board dinner, completely wiped out, went to bed, and then had 2 days of nonstop education with Ed and my 500 closest friends in Baltimore. Had a wonderful time. I was right next to the harbor. Never left. People were like, how'd you endure Baltimore? I rarely left the hotel. And if I did, it was just down the hill to the restaurant and back up the hill. So did not really experience much of Baltimore. But listen, we really did focus a lot on this great transfer of wealth. Over $32 trillion right now sitting in tax-deferred retirement accounts. We have people with property, houses, farms, other investments. Over the next 10 to 20, 30 years, this big transfer is going to start happening in a big way. Just like 10 to 11,000 people a day are turning 65, over the next 10, 20, 30 years, we'll see 10 to 11,000 people a day dying. And that's where that great wealth transfer comes into play. So I keep talking and preaching, whatever you want to call it. I'm trying to get back on the podcast more. So if you're working to position your family now to be part of that great wealth transfer, we all want to have enough money to leave to the next. Because if we leave money to the next generation, that means we didn't run out of money. That's a good place to be. It's not the big wealth transfer to your family that I'm worried about. It's the big tax transfer to the IRS. Yes, tax, T-A-X, transfer to the IRS. Ed discussed this a lot, which I loved. He said, what is your three-year plan? He looked us straight in the eye. What is your three-year plan? What's the three-year plan for the people that you counsel every day? 2023, 2024, 2025. Does it sound familiar? David McKnight was there. He laid out how now in your 50s and 60s, how much easier it is to become more tax-free. We talked about the federal gift and estate tax exemption, how it's going to get cut in half, right, in a matter of a few years. 2025, the final drive, what do you need to know to win? If you haven't listened to the podcast, if you haven't read the book, please read it. It's a simple read. It doesn't take you long. Hopefully it inspires you to do something. We studied the more certainty in retirement income is now in play and how the media, including an article just in February in the New York Times, promoted creating a personal pension for yourself. Well, how do you do that? Well, it's called an annuity. What's so funny about that is people were like 10 years ago, like, annuity suck. Well, now they're like, man, you can give me guaranteed lifetime income. I can't outlive and I don't have to worry about what the market's doing. Crazy. We talked about the mindset of required minimum distributions and how to change that to how, what's my required maximum? What should I take out? What's the maximum I should take out? People are so focused on the word minimum, they need to take a second and think about what I should take out. What's the maximum I should take out? Given our low tax rates, the expanded brackets, thank you to inflation, thinking minimum is the wrong way to go about RMDs. Think about it much differently. So we spent so much time on that. Unfortunately, I got to take another break to wrap up this show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, so here's my plan. I was out right for the last 2 weeks. We replayed a show. Dr. Hughes took care of me the previous week. I did call in from afar, which was fun. I called in from Baltimore. And the next 2 weeks, I'll be also on a little hiatus as well. Trust me, I'm not just out lollygagging. I am doing some things that are meaningful. But I will be out of the office, and I'll be out of the studio. So Doug and the clan will be taking over for the next 2 weeks. I will be calling in at least one of those 2 weeks for sure. But just so much to go over, so much to talk about. And at the Ed Slot meeting, I'll leave you with this, that we talked a lot about these rules with the SECURE Act that I've talked about here on the show. Many of them come into effect 2024 all the way to 2033. And by and large, more to come, because by the time we get together in the fall and probably before then, we'll get some clarity on how these things are supposed to work. Who has to put money in the Roth as a catch-up? How do you actually transfer money from a 529 to a Roth if you have extra money left over? All those kind of things need a lot more clarity. IRS, Congress, hopefully before my next meeting and hopefully before then, we'll be able to clear that all up for us and I can clear it up for you, and then you'll have good information to move forward. So I hope everyone has a great week. Happy graduation if you're in town. I don't know why you'd stumble along this radio show, but maybe you did. Looking for local radio. Appreciate that very much. If you miss any of the show, catch it on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m., always on WGCLradio.com. And wherever you pick up your favorite podcast, just type in Your Money with David Hayes or 2025, The Final Drive, What You Need to Know to Win. And we'll make it happen, as I say. Have a great one, everyone. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.